Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Dalton Gackle, along with my co-host, Zachary Neuendorf. Zach and I are both students at Iowa State, and sadly, we will be leaving KHOI soon to go back to ISU. In our last show with you, we thought we would talk about some aspects of college life.
On today's show, we will hear from Cole Stout, the new student body president at Iowa State, and from students Anna Van John and Josiah Green, who, looking to increase their scope on the world, found chances through school and church to travel abroad and interact with new communities across the globe.
That's right. I spoke with Anna and Josiah about their enriching journeys abroad. They each went for different reasons initially and through different avenues, but they had similar takeaways. Anna went through the Iowa State University Study Abroad Office, which, along with college-specific study abroad programs, is the most common way students get to travel.
Went to the Study Abroad Center at the Memorial Union, and I talked to people about, like, what the best option was for me, like, what I wanted to get out of it. And then I, like, emailed the coordinator back and forth a little bit, and I got signed up online. It's, like, a pretty easy process. You just go through all these steps, fill out the paperwork online. And then I went to an orientation beforehand, and then I was on my way. I didn't have to get a visa or anything, and they took care of a lot of the stuff for me. So, yeah, it's pretty easy. It's mostly online.
Anna is a dietetics major who was looking to get the authentic Italian experience, but she got a bit more than that.
I just picked this summer, and I said, all right, I'm going to do it. And I picked Florence because I'm a dietetics major, so I wanted to do something with, like, nutrition and cooking classes, and they had a lot of that there because it's Italy, and so they have a lot of good food. I just did an Iowa State program for, I think it was 6 weeks, to Florence, Italy, and I took a cooking class called Current Trends in Italian Cuisine. It was really fun.
So what was the experience like overall? What was it like being in a different place, trying to learn things to add to your education?
Well, it was my first time, like, overseas, so everything was different. So it was kind of a culture shock. Like, you have to pay for water, and you pay to go to the bathroom, and all the food is different, and everybody speaks a different language. But my chef that taught grew up in America, so that was, like, it was pretty English in the classroom. But we were learning about Italian cuisine, so we'd go out to the marketplace, and we'd talk with vendors, and, like, the farmers that grew the food, and we learned about, I don't know, just the history and the culture of it all. We got to talk to, like, restaurateurs and people who, like, made the best mozzarella in Italy. And
so what impact did this trip have on you specifically?
I don't know. I really loved it, and I would totally recommend it to anyone. I think it changed how I look at things a lot. Like, I wouldn't say it's crucial for someone to study abroad, but, like, now that I've been all those places, I can look at things with a different point of view. Yeah, I just learned a lot of different things, and it's kind of cool. Like, people are the same everywhere. Like, they might look different and speak a different language, but everybody makes the same jokes, and they all want the same things.
So how many other people were on this trip with you taking a similar course or even different courses but in the same area as you?
Well, the university I went to was called Lorenzo de' Medici, so it was mostly American students, but there were a lot of people from, like, North Carolina and New York and a lot of that. So I don't know how many overall, like, maybe a couple thousand were in the whole university, but from Iowa State, I would say my session maybe around 30 people from Iowa State.
And in talking with them, what kind of impact did the program have on them?
Well, I didn't know any of my roommates before I went, but they're all from Iowa State. So, like, it was cool getting to know them. And I know, like, one of them took a History of Florence class, and she said that she loved it. It was cool, like, learning all the history, because in America, our history goes back a couple hundred years, but in Europe, it goes back forever, you know? Mm-hmm. So she said that was really cool. Just the differences, I guess.
So you mentioned that you didn't think that study abroad is crucial for someone to get a successful college experience, but why would you recommend studying abroad?
Well, I don't think, like, taking classes is necessarily crucial, but I know that just, like, traveling and getting to know different places and different people, just, like, I don't know, people think differently all over the world, and if you're in your career and you're encountering that, it's a lot easier if you've already encountered it before and you can kind of think outside the box because you've seen things done different ways than just like how they do it in your country or your area.
So you think that people should get the experience because it'll help them be able to just connect with people more once they go off into the real world?
Yeah, I mean, it looks good on your resume, and it's good to talk about in interviews, but I think it really does impact how you interact with other people. I mean, I have a lot of really cool stories, and...
Well, tell some of them.
Okay. I don't know. In Florence, Florence is cool, because I stayed there the longest, so I got to know it. You feel kind of like a local by the end, because you know where the best grocery stores are, and, like, which restaurants are the touristy ones, and which are, like, the authentic Italian restaurants. And there's secret bakeries that open at, like, 2 a.m. They're basically, like, the huge bakeries that make the food for all the cafes in Florence, so it's, like, wholesale. And they're technically not supposed to sell you things because for tax reasons. But if you – there's no sign, and they open them, too, so you just, like, go and knock on the door, and they'll open it kind of, like, quietly and secretly. And you say, like, I want something with chocolate or something to that effect, and they'll just, like, bring you out pastries and you give them a euro, and it was like the best thing I've ever tasted. It's like Nutella donut, something like that, but it was awesome.
And then so on the end of this study abroad trip, you actually then stayed a little longer and did some exploring. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so my friend who'd actually studied abroad in Scotland the year prior, she flew out to Florence, and we traveled for 2 weeks. We did a lot of countries in 2 weeks, so it was pretty intense. But, yeah, we went all around Europe. We started in Italy and then Slovenia, Croatia, Austria, Germany, Luxembourg, France, and then technically the Vatican City is a country, but that's just... so we just took trains all over, and, yeah, we went to all those different countries. There was 3 different languages total, so that was kind of like... Each day would be in a different language, which was intense but cool.
Why did you choose those places?
Kind of just their geography. We did a loop, like a circle with the train system. And we wanted to hit Spain too, but we just didn't have time. That was like the most diverse countries we could hit in 2 weeks, I think.
Nice. So just trying to cram as many in as you could.
Yeah, really. We slept on trains and it was very tiring, but worth it.
Which of those extra countries that you went to was your favorite?
Jeez, I don't know. I've been asked that before, and it's hard to choose a favorite. Austria was cool just because we were in the western part, so we were near the Alps. So I, like, climbed an Alp, and it was just beautiful because we were in this little town, and we were surrounded by Alps. And then Germany was cool. We saw a lot of, like, old castles, and it's just super green everywhere. I wasn't expecting it. And we stayed with a family we knew on a military base, and it turned out that my ancestors are from a town, like, a couple miles away from where we stayed, which I didn't know.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is sort of cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to what you said about Austria. I've also been to Austria while I was in high school, and the Alps are just something else.
Beautiful.
I've always kind of wanted to go to Croatia, though. I don't know. I think it might just be their really cool soccer uniforms for their international team or something. But what was Croatia like?
I did that on a weekend trip, actually, while I was in Florence. So we went to Split, Croatia. So it was right on the ocean.
Oh, nice.
Mediterranean. That was fun. We just kind of, like, hung around the town, and it was a really old town, so we went shopping in, like, cobbled streets and went to the beach. And then on the way back, we went to this national park. It's, like, K-R-K-A, national park, like, Kirka, maybe. And it's just waterfalls everywhere, and it was, I think, the most beautiful place I've ever been.
How do you think that just deciding to go exploring on your own kind of impacted not only your summer, but your college experience?
Well, I did. I think that was probably when I learned the most, those 2 weeks, because I was with my friend who I'd known for a while, but it really tests your limits of friendship to be nonstop with a person for 2 weeks. So you have to learn patience, and you're in, like, high-stress situations because you don't want to miss your trains, and you're in an unknown culture where you don't speak the language. So you have to, it builds character, definitely. It was terrifying, but also, like, exhilarating and exciting, and I don't know. I would recommend it to anyone.
I would like to go backpacking across Europe for absolutely no reason whatsoever other than to just do it.
Yeah. My friend had a backpack. I chickened out and brought a suitcase because I didn't want to buy a 60-liter backpack. But
you said that the trip really tests your patience and can strain a little bit on your friendship, although that it turns out all right in the end. Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess when tensions are running high, you don't want things to go wrong. Like, we were, our train to somewhere was leaving in like 2 minutes, and my metro ticket wasn't working because we had to take the metro to the train station. And I don't know, I was getting very upset about it, and like everything that my friend did, I criticized because I thought that she should have been looking at the map and while I was trying to get my ticket figured out, and she didn't know where we were supposed to go. And I don't know, we never actually had like a yelling match, but we had to have some time apart every now and then. We originally weren't going to go to Luxembourg, but we got on the wrong train from Germany to Paris. So we were going the right way, but we weren't originally supposed to go through Luxembourg. So that was kind of cool. We just like randomly went to a different country. And then when we got to Paris, we walked 17 miles with our suitcases.
Wow.
Because things are a lot further spread out than we thought they were. Like, we walked to the Notre Dame and the Louvre and the Eiffel Tower. And they're further apart than they look on a map. I guess I just say it's really good for you to study abroad, but it's also great. Like, I kept a Facebook photo album, and all my family and friends and everyone could see what I was doing. And a lot of, like, my aunts and uncles, they said they were kind of living vicariously through me because they said they will probably never get to those places in their lifetime. So they love just, like, watching me go to all those places and take the pictures, and I think they really appreciated it too. So that was cool.
Nice. So it's not only a great experience for you, but it's a great experience for those close to you.
Yeah. And then you bring them back great Italian foods and souvenirs, and they love it.
Anna went into the trip looking to add to her dietetics experience, but she got so much more out of it. Traveling really opens your mind to how other cultures live, while at the same time reminding us that people in foreign places aren't as dissimilar as we might think. This is KHOI Community Radio on 89.1 FM Story City. Another ISU student who traveled is Josiah Green, an industrial engineering major. Rather than using Iowa State's study abroad office, he took a trip through Cornerstone, one of the churches on campus, to explore how his faith relates with those around the globe.
I spent 10 weeks in China. I was in the city of Wuhan, China, for about 8 weeks, and then I was in a city called Xi'an, which is about 5 hours west of Beijing, for 2 weeks. And I went to China because I was on a mission trip with my church here in Ames, Cornerstone Church, and so it was one of the countries that was offered for an overseas summer experience, and I thought that China was a good choice, being an engineering major and having lots of Chinese colleagues, and just being the biggest country by population in the world.
So could you just describe the experience overall that you and your other fellow travelers went through?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for 8 weeks in Wuhan, we were taking language classes and culture classes and meeting university students and inviting them to English club, playing basketball with them, going out to dinner with them, and really just trying to learn the culture from native people in the country. So we got to have lots of great conversations about school and about career aspirations from both sides, you know, talking to them about their life and then sharing our life and things that are important to us. And one of the things that motivated us as a going with our church is talking about our faith and talking about Jesus Christ, and just hearing their views on religion and views on deep, important things to them in their life, and really gained an insight into the average young university student's perspective on life, being from, you know, such a different culture. And it was just so eye-opening and just really cool to see. So that was 8 weeks in Wuhan, which is a city of 10 million people with over 1 million university students. So lots of opportunities to meet people, and all the university students speak English to some degree, or at least can read and write English. So it was really easy for us to connect with the Chinese there, which was really cool. Some of the different age groups don't have as much English knowledge, and so it was kind of hard for us to engage with the older population, but the university students we could have really good conversations with. And then the last 2 weeks of our trip was a camp for orphans. So we worked with Chinese orphans for 2 weeks, brought them into a summer camp, week-long experience with a translator to help us with our Chinese. And then, just got to do fun summer camp things like swimming in a pool and playing games, reading stories and stuff.
It sounds like this trip was kind of threefold for you, a little bit getting experience learning some culture and language for your engineering degree, and then finding out how other cultures deal with their faith, and then also just helping out a little bit, doing a little bit of service with the summer camp. How was the trip made possible? Like, did you guys have like a community pool to kind of get you funded, or did you have to pay your own way? How did it all come about?
So our church helped us with some fundraising from friends and family, and then we also had to pay some of our own way, and our parents helped out too. But we had a one-time fundraising deadline and fee that we had to pay, and then for the summer we worked off of that budget. For Cornerstone Church in Ames sent, I think, about 50 students to 3 different countries this summer, and they split them up into groups. So ours was a group of 6, a team, so we had a budget that I was actually the one that managed our budget this summer, but we got to have food and travel and pay rent and all that stuff through the budget. So
who decided that you guys were going to go to China? Like, why China versus someplace in, like, say, South America, or traveling to Europe or Africa or something like that?
Our church has some partners in China, specifically in Wuhan, and because Cornerstone Church has done a lot of stuff with the Salt Company campus ministry, which primarily focuses on university students and engaging them in their faith. The city of Wuhan, which has over 1 million college students, is another really big college town that just has a lot of opportunities to, again, engage university students in conversations about faith and telling them about Jesus and kind of trying to shape the next generation, not just in America for the Christian church, but also in all over the world. And so with so many students in this city, it's a really cool opportunity, and it's such a stark cultural contrast too, which is really cool. Just the way that the Chinese culture has been established through thousands and thousands of years of history makes it a really enriching and valuable experience for any student to experience. So I think China is one of the, it just serves many different purposes and gets students acquainted with a people group that is shaped from a completely different history and background than somebody in, you know, South America, which has an incredibly rich culture and history too. The difference between the West and the East, and I think that's one of the pulls to an Asian country for young students.
So what kind of impact did the trip have specifically on you?
I was always wanting to travel, but being able to do international travel, and we actually got to go to Hong Kong for a few days and see Beijing, and so first of all, it just helped me realize that I want to travel for the rest of my life, because there's so much of the world to see other than the Midwest, which is where I've grown up and now go to school. And on more of a deep level, it just caused me to appreciate people just so much more. There's every single person on the sidewalk, no matter where what country you're in, just has such a unique story. And being able to hear that story every single day, talking to students and gaining insight into their world through cultural and religious conversations, is just really cool and helped me value just the experiences and the background that every single person has that shapes them into the unique person that they are when we encounter them at the supermarket or in class or on the job site. And so I think just really opened my eyes to how valuable people are throughout the world and how important it is to just have such a global mindset and just an open mind when talking to people and with how you treat people and different experiences. Because one of the things that Chinese people do incredibly well is they're just so warm and hospitable, especially to foreigners. And I don't think I can say the same, at least for myself, towards foreign students at Iowa State. I'm just more keep to myself, do my own thing, and then they keep to themselves and do their own thing. But in China, it's just they want to help so much because they know that foreigners don't know much about China, and they want to share their culture with us. And I really want to take that back to my lifestyle in America and just engage people from all around the world. I think Chinese people are so awesome, and I know we have lots of awesome representatives of the Chinese culture at Iowa State, but so many times, especially now coming home in the news and seeing lots of tension between the Chinese government and the American government, and how sometimes, I know for me, before traveling there, it definitely shaped my perspective, maybe in not so positive of a light, but being amongst the culture, being with the people, just realizing how down-to-earth and friendly the Chinese people are has made me just grow to love China. And I realize that not everybody has to share my love and enthusiasm for the Chinese people and the Chinese culture, but just realizing that just because politically we are different for sure and our governments maybe don't always agree, something that the Chinese people like to say is, we'll let politicians do the politicians' work and the people just do what people do best. And they love Americans. They love ideals in America, even though they know that our governments disagree, and they sometimes the Chinese public disagrees with our government. That doesn't change how they treat American people and foreign people. And so I would really, just encourage people to look at China and look past the political differences and just see the incredible culture and the very rich history and just the awesome people that make up the largest people group in the world.
Talking with some other people that traveled with you, what did they have to say? Like, what kind of impact did this have on them as well?
We all really enjoyed our time. I think for a lot of us, travel was a big thing. All of us grew up either in Minnesota, Illinois, or Iowa, and so just cool to be outside of the country and then living in a city, too. We went to the Great Wall of China, one of the greatest tourist destinations in the world. And so I think that's just really sweet for all of us. And then I know lots of my teammates are also really impacted by the orphan camp that we were volunteering at, just how important adoption is and how real the crisis of orphans in China, as well as, you know, the rest of the world, and how everybody deserves to have a family. You know, how much we are blessed here in America to have families, to go to school, to just have so many resources that we have access to that we don't even think about. We did nothing to deserve the lifestyle that we have here in the great Midwest. You know, it just dropped in our lap.
Josiah went on the trip initially just to learn about how his faith is influenced by culture, but he came away with much more. He learned how important it is to be connected with others, not only through faith, but through society and culture, a discovery he will use to his advantage as he rides along his career path. Josiah has also traveled for his industrial engineering major, though not quite as far as China, or at least not yet.
So I did a summer internship last summer with Associated Milk Producers Incorporated, which is a fancy name for saying they make cheese, as a private label company. And I worked in Jim Falls, Wisconsin, which is near Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. And I went there because I had a family friend who worked there and recommended that I applied for the job. And that was a really cool experience, too. I grew up in Minnesota, and so Wisconsin has always kind of been a rival state, but super beautiful there and had just an incredible experience. First time ever working in a factory, and just got to see the process of cheese in a whole new way, as well as just gain a huge appreciation for not only people people who work in factories, but also people who work in the agricultural sphere, and just work to feed us every single day. So that was a sweet experience I was able to have last summer too.
Yeah, and these co-ops, not only can you go places throughout the Midwest, but further off in the country, and you can also go to foreign countries for them.
The market for engineers internationally is really big. I know now, since being in China, I'm looking into internships in China at factories, especially as an industrial engineer, and it's a huge opportunity to be able to do cross-cultural work and see the world. I know people... we'll go to Europe and South America. There's lots of service internships in South America that are available to engineering students as well. So, yeah, I hope to look into those more, especially with the summer I've had.
So why do you think that those programs where you get to go to different countries as part of your engineering program, why would those be helpful or even sometimes crucial for students during their college experience?
I think it's really important to just shift and shape perspective on the job that we do as engineers, because being an engineer can become very routine sometimes and can seem like the impact is just in your factory or, you know, just in the few states that you service. But realizing that every decision that engineers make has a global impact, whether it's the supplier who's bringing the raw material to your factory or the person who's going to recycle and reuse your product all over the world. So just realizing that design of product and customer relations and even just environmental effects have just drastic impact all over the world, and being able to see it in a different context and see how your work makes more of an impact than you could maybe see in America. And I think it's really important, and also just to gain an appreciation for other cultures and their interpretation on the same engineering principles that we've been brought up with, because specifically with math and science, it's pretty much a universal language, but there's different application in different contexts. And so being able to see that in an international environment, I think, is very, very valuable for students to have, especially engineering students.
And would you just briefly describe your major and then what kind of career path you see yourself going on, and especially now with the experiences you've had with your co-op and going abroad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so industrial engineering is a pretty broad term, especially at Iowa State. There are 5 focus areas. You can either focus in manufacturing, in human factors, in engineering management, in operations research, or enterprise computing. And some of those are technical and don't really mean much for most people. Even I don't really know what they mean, but basically it means you can do business and service industry jobs with an engineering focus, or you can go into manufacturing, or you can do both. And the goal of an industrial engineer is to improve a process to help people, whether it's the process of making something or the process of getting cash at an ATM or going through a line at Disney World. It's a cool and very general term that I, especially after this summer and my internship last summer, it's just really cool to see how I can really do anything I want with the degree I have. I really hope to explore opportunities next summer to see what it looks like to kind of blend the manufacturing and the very factory-oriented problem-solving methods that my degree focuses on to a service industry or a business who produces a product that's maybe not quite as tangible as a car or a cell phone, or just how the process and the whole system of providing services to help people can be improved and can use a lot of revamping and a good engineering problem solver to help some people who are maybe not as technical and who maybe don't have the time in their job description to improve the aspects of their company that really need that help. So I think that that's something I really want to explore. Yeah, just lots of opportunities within industrial engineering at Iowa State that I'm so happy to be a part of, and to kind of shape my future as maybe more of a non-traditional engineering professional.
This is Local Talk on KHOY Radio. I'm your host, Dalton Gackle, along with Zachary Neuendorf. We just heard 2 students' travel experiences from this summer. Both Josiah Green and Anna Van John were adamant that traveling is something that everyone should do at some point, whether it be as part of your college experience, on your own, or as a family. There is so much to learn through traveling, and we are lucky enough to have so many opportunities to travel right here in Ames, Zach and I especially at ISU.
Traveling is a great way to learn about social issues that are affecting the global community. It's interesting that Josiah mentioned the relationships we have with our foreign exchange students, because there are also issues that affect us right here on campus. With the new school year approaching, we thought it'd be fitting to speak with Iowa State's new student body president, Cole Stout. He is a social issue-oriented president and shows passion in raising awareness on campus. He's able to go remarkably in-depth on the issues he sees the student body facing in the upcoming year. I started off by asking who he is.
So I am a senior now, double majoring in political science and public relations. I'm from Rockford, Iowa, which is north central part of the state, kind of by Mason City. I came to Iowa State after my mom forced me to come on a campus visit. I was going to go to Iowa, but then I fell in love with the campus here, the people here, much better than over at the University of Iowa.
What were the issues that you've been working towards for the upcoming school year?
The first one is sexual assault prevention. The next is mental health and making sure our students have the resources to grow as people. And then the last is civic engagement, and that has things like getting our students registered to vote in the general election in November. How do we get students engaged in the political process, like lobbying, whether it be city, state, federal levels, advocating for student interests? How do we get students to have respectful and constructive discussions on topics like diversity and inclusion?
The first one, sexual assault, would you like to delve into what you see as the problem and then what sort of long-term solutions you hope to chip away towards?
We have to do more work on the prevention side of things. Sexual assault is a problem on college campuses across the nation. No matter what college campus you go to, you're not going to escape this problem. The Campus Climate Survey, it's a study done across the nation, and that found that 1 in 5 women, while they were at college, experienced sexual assault. At Iowa State, our Campus Climate Survey revealed that 1 in 4 women experienced some form of sexual misconduct while they were at Iowa State. You know, we had, you know, the Department of Education came in and did an investigation here, and it's happening on college campuses all over. And so we're seeing a lot of changes in the reporting and adjudication processes. But we saw, you know, we started the It's On Us movement. I think it was my freshman year, and it kind of died off a little bit. We need to revive that, and we need to, you know, create a climate and a culture where intervening in a potential sexual assault is, it's not uncomfortable, just normal.
Mm-hmm.
So especially how do we get our students to have the resources and the skills and the know-how to intervene in a situation like that? Because it can be very uncomfortable for students, especially if, you know, it's a friend or someone you maybe don't even know at all. And what's the difference between, you know, the hookup culture at college? What's the difference between that and two consenting parties and someone who's definitely intoxicated and can't consent? Making sure we can get them the resources to help prevent that kind of situation is really going to help us bring down that statistic. We can talk about reporting and adjudication all we want and how we need to reform the system, but that's not going to bring down the 1 in 4 number or the 1 in 5 number unless we do stuff on the prevention side. That's where the real effects are going to happen. I think it's 6% of men on college campuses commit 90% of campus sexual assaults. So it's not a huge population of men that go out and just have these very sinister kind of beliefs. It's a small set of the population, but we need to figure out as a community, how do we root that out and how do we see that and how do we stop that before it happens? Because
you mentioned the It's On Us movement. I've seen the posters around campus, but to be honest, I'm not 100% sure what the movement does or what its mission is. I know it's to prevent sexual assault, but I don't know what sort of action it's taking.
So this was launched by President Obama, I think it was my freshman year ago, so 3 years ago now already. And we had a big launch event. It was great, and everyone was really involved. We had a cool video, but it's on us to stop sexual assault. Is really what it's there for. And I was in Washington, D.C. with about 100 other student body presidents over the summer. We were at the White House, and we were meeting with President Obama's advisors and the people that started the It's On Us movement and really investigating how do we change that now? Because it's on there now, but we've plateaued. We haven't, especially at Iowa State, we have not been able to do the programming that we need to do to really have an effect other than saying it's on us. Cool. You can wear it on your button, but unless you're doing the programming and actually like reaching out to students and educating students, it's pointless.
the resources you're talking about for It's On Us and then your sexual assault prevention. It's basically educating the student body about sexual assault, how to prevent it at parties.
And we're looking at how can student government do that. I've established 3 new task forces, one for each of the topics I've said. That we're going to talk about. The first one, obviously, sexual assault. And so they're really going to dive into what is student government's role in this process, and what are some initiatives we can undertake? What are some programming we can offer? Whether that's student government funds, you know, weekly bystander intervention trainings, and we mandate student organizations have to come to get funding. Like, that's an option that's on the table. We can find other ways that we can compel students to come. Ideally, we'd like them to come just on their own, but it's very idealistic. Other options, like a freshman seminar, where we combine different elements of students have their freshman year and combine it into one Cyclone 101 or something, where we do bystander intervention training. We talk about financial literacy and information literacy, which is your Library 160. So maybe we drop Library 160 and put it into this 16-week freshman seminar. We're open to exploring a bunch of different things.
Since your time at Iowa State, have you seen any improvement?
Yeah, I think the statistics are showing that we're not seeing an increase in assaults. We're seeing an increase in reporting, which is good. It's starting to create that culture where coming out and speaking up is not so taboo anymore. And admitting that this happened to you, that you're comfortable enough to come out and speak up. The ISUPD just started a new program called Start by Believing. And that's the first thing, is when someone says they've been sexually assaulted, your first step is to believe them and help to get them resources so that way they feel comfortable continuing on and sharing with whoever they need to share with to feel comfortable. On something like sexual assault, it can really have a profound effect on someone's life forever and change the direction of their life.
This is Local Talk on KHY Radio, and I am Zachary Neuendorf. We are hearing from Cole Stout, Iowa State Student Body President since April and for the upcoming school year. He is speaking on the importance of raising sexual assault prevention. Stout also wants all students to be able to take care of themselves mentally, but he is concerned Iowa State's current resources are not quite efficient enough.
There's been a stigma around mental health for decades. And we're starting to see that stigma is really starting to kind of fade away. And as that happens, more and more students are coming forward and asking for help and saying they need help. And we just don't have the resources on campus right now to do that, to help those students that need it. Student counseling services, they do a great job when they get students in, but getting students in is the problem. You can only have so many appointments with them. They're booked 5 to 6 weeks out at some points, and who knows what could happen in that 5 to 6 weeks for that student, for that individual. And there's not a lot of resources in the Ames community. I've met with Mayor Campbell before and talking about how do we navigate this as a campus community? How do we attract mental health providers to campus so that way when we're overflowing at the university, we have some sort of relationship with a private firm that we can get students out there and get them help without having to leave Ames? The state legislator, state government's not really helping out either. You saw Governor Branstad cut funding to a mental health facility, and we need to be funding these mental health institutions as our society changes. And I think these problems have always been there. Our generation, we're higher incidence of mental health disorders. And if you look at stress levels, like, they're higher than they've ever been. And I don't know if it's the way we're all connected with each other and how people from around the world can interact with each other and essentially judge each other. And always having to be on 100%, controlling your reputation at all times because everything is recorded. And one thing that, you know, I'd like to explore bringing to campus is something called the crisis text line, which anyone can use at any point. You text, I'm not exactly sure what word and to what number, but you text it and you're connected with someone who can help you talk about what you're going through. It's seen a lot of success on campuses. You can call in, but people don't like to do that because they're afraid someone's listening to them. Whereas if they can text, they can sit there in class and text, or in their room with their roommate and text, and the roommate is not going to have any idea what's going on. And students prefer that. And so we can do that. And what happens is if we bring the crisis text line to campus, like, and as an official program, we can get detailed statistics about what times our students are texting, what are their issues, What do they say are the causes of those? And so we can target our resources as a university specifically to where they need to go. That way we're not wasting resources. Most of our students are dealing with high anxiety. We can allocate more resources to that instead of putting them into depression or vice versa. If most of our students are struggling with depression or more, we can focus more resources on depression instead of something else. And we can also look at ways, some prevention methods, some peer-to-peer counseling. Those are all things we're really exploring over the next year or two. That's, again, that task force is really identifying what is student government's role. I mean, the Student Health Center, Student Counseling Services, and we're doing a lot of work there. We're hiring more staff for Student Counseling Services, but still it's not going to be enough staff. And also we're running out of space. Where can we house these professionals?
You mentioned briefly the resources that we currently have, but what are they more in depth?
So the main one, Student Counseling Services, they do a great job over there once you can get in to see them. Students who want to go see need help immediately, like they're having an emergency, like a break, they can get in to see someone almost immediately. The issue is trying to schedule that follow-up booked 5 to 6 weeks out. And that 5 to 6 weeks, a lot can happen, especially like in college where like a day is almost 2 or 3 days, just because we're packing so much into our days. We're starting to do some more work with peer-to-peer counseling. And that's put in, like, you know, group sessions. We've got some like psychiatrists at TLIN, but not all these situations that students are facing need medication. Coming up with those resources and finding a way to fund them is an important part. And the funding piece is by far the trickiest. I think we can start to identify what needs to happen, but identifying the sources of funding is very tricky because we saw, you know, tuitions increasing this year. We don't want to raise student fees to pay for a lot of things because students are already going to be paying a lot more. Just the university finance system is very complex and diverse. We've got a bunch of different sources of funding and how does it all work together and what can pay for what and what can't go where. And trying to find those resources is difficult. Student government, our budget, we built up a nice reserve for some major projects. And I think this is the year where we start funding things that are really important. I'm not a huge fan of investing in infrastructure projects with student government money. I think we should be funding programs like It's On Us or Start By Believing or really doing some bystander intervention training where it's not necessarily the university's responsibility to maintain, but it's on us as students to make sure that there's resources for mental health and sexual assault and a bunch of different other programs. This year is really going to be laying the foundation for what is student government's role in all of these issues and how do we start building on it.
When Cole Stout was elected Iowa State's student body president, he knew his priorities would be on sexual assault prevention, improving mental health resources on campus, and last but not least, encouraging students to be engaged in politics locally and nationally by voting and voicing their opinions and concerns.
There's the voting, actual physically voting aspect. There's the policy making. And there's also the values and character discussions where we really discover what direction do we want to go as a people. So the first one, physically voting. Students are in a very precarious time of their lives. You come from all over the nation, sometimes in the world. We have 110 countries represented here. And so if you're eligible to vote, are you registered at home? Are you registered? Do you want to register in Ames? You move every year. Most of our students move every year, and so they're not necessarily in the same precinct that they were the year before. And so that it's very tricky, and sometimes navigating those laws, state laws, is hard to do, especially if I want to stay registered at home and I want an absentee ballot. How do I request the absentee ballot? When does that have to be in by? When does my request have to be in by? If I'm in Ames, what precinct am I in? And how do I change my voter registration to my new address? And it's all kind of confusing. So we're exploring bringing a program called TurboVote to campus. The Secretary of State's office here in Iowa has started to explore that, and they've signed a contract, I believe, with TurboVote. It's online registration, but not entirely. So what it does is if I'm at Iowa State and I want to register to vote, go on to TurboVote, enter in where my physical address is, and it also works with, like, campus addresses because if I live in, say, a residence hall, they don't have those physical addresses. And so they have them programmed into the system if we bring it to campus. And then that'll tell me, you know, my precinct, and it'll electronically fill out my form for me. All I have to do is print it, and then I sign it and mail it in. If I do live in Iowa, they've rolled out electronic registration. You can register completely online. You don't have to send in any forms. But that's only if you have an Iowa driver's license, because it goes through the DOT. They sync up with that system. So only if you're an Iowa resident can you fully register online. And also on TurboVote, you put in your contact information. So when there's elections within your precinct, you'll get like a text message and say, okay, here's your voting location. Here's some polls are open. Or like a week before, so even if it's like a school board election, say, oh, the school board election is in a week. Here's where you can find information on the candidates. And so it really helps students to remember to vote and where to vote, because like I think if you were around for the caucuses, there's 5 precincts on campus, like divide campus up, and those were all like in different rooms in Memorial Union, and trying to find the right room is very, like, it can be tricky. Mm-hmm. And so reminding students where to vote based on their precinct is important, because there's a ton of places and your friends might not be in the same precinct as you, and so if you show up at the wrong precinct, then you don't vote and they just get discouraged. So if you go to the right place right away, students are more likely to vote. What happens is we feel, our generation especially, feels left out. And we're left out because we don't vote. It's our own fault that we're left out. Politicians and policymakers, they don't come talk to us because we aren't involved. We aren't engaged in the system. Bernie Sanders engaged a lot of students and listened to them and got them engaged. And so they voted for him. And that's why you saw him perform so well, is because he engaged students and they voted. They physically voted, so then our interests are more represented. And so if we can vote, we can show, not only our federal legislators, but you can talk about state officials, which I think are much more important to us as students at a public university. And if we can engage those voters and those politicians, we can have a much more successful time.
For TurboVote, is that free?
No, it's not. It's free to use if we signed a contract. So say student government wanted to bring it to campus. Uh-huh. We would, I don't remember exactly what the cost is, but we pay a certain contract fee for each year. Then also what happens too, is you can get those forms mailed to you. So like the electronic form I talked about is if I don't have access to a printer, well, you can get it mailed to you. And then with also a pre-stamped envelope to send it back. Mm-hmm. The form back to wherever it needs to go. So it would be actually addressed to, like, the Story County auditor. So then we would also pick up the cost of printing that stuff and mailing it. And so it's not a free program, but it's a way to get students engaged. And so balancing what that looks like, and that's what we're exploring, what our options are.
Cole's plate sounds full, so I asked him how he plans to juggle it all.
Before everyone gets back, it's like a one-man show. I'm running the whole thing. But I'm excited for people to come back, and I can start, like, here, take this project and run off with it.
Yeah.
And let me know what happens.
Funding all these, it comes from the government student body budget? Or it would be a mixture of?
It would be a mixture. I mean, there's certain things like mental health resources where the university has a commitment, they are as invested in this as we are. And so there's some places where the university would pay for it. There's some where it would be only student government. There's some that would be a combination. There's some where we can get grant funding or alumni funding. Or that's one of the big challenges, is finding where all this funding can come from. Sometimes like the sexual assault prevention is going to be probably largely student government driven, because university resources go to reporting and adjudication. That's where their resources are committed. And I don't think we're doing enough on prevention. And I think that's a student initiative where we say, as students, we care about this and we want to be on the prevention. We're on the front end. We're trying to stop it before it happens. But if it does happen, when it does happen, because it's going to happen, the university can kind of take over. Because then you get into a lot of legal stuff that I don't think student government should be dipping their toes into. Because we're not qualified to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But in things like TurboVote, that, I would expect that we would get some commitment from the university, because I think university is just as committed to making sure our students vote as we are. Because if students vote, then it's better for the university.
What do you think sets Iowa State or the Ames community apart from the other college towns?
Specifically, look at you follow on Facebook or anything, you see all these articles and organizations that rate Ames the best place, best college town, top 10 best college towns, best places to start careers. We have a low unemployment rate. The campus itself, as a land-grant institution, was founded and we just were given land. And so then we had the campus, and then the city grew around the campus, and which is really cool, especially for a school our size, to have a really dedicated campus where once you're on campus, you know it and you feel it. Whereas if you go to Iowa City, it's more of an urban campus and you're walking around and the city's mixed in with the campus. And I'm not a big fan of that. There's some people that are fans of that, and that's okay. But I think the way it is, it's set up and it makes the community, it's a real community where everyone feels really included and invested in campus, and the people of Ames are, we have a great working relationship with the city. We're one of the only schools that has, in the Big 12 for sure, that has a member of the student government, like, on the city council. So that's something we take for granted, but most schools do not have that and do not have that kind of working relationship with the city, which is something we really appreciate because it helps us to make Ames not only a better place for Iowa State students, but for the community as a whole. If we can get those campus community relationships to grow, it's better for our students, it's better for the community, and it's better for recruiting people to Ames, whether it's to go to school here or to live here.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. You just heard Cole Stout, Iowa State's student body president, talking about why he loves ISU and Ames. We'd like to thank Cole for taking the time to speak with us. I'm your host, Dalton Gackle, along with Zachary Neuendorf.
We are approaching the 71st anniversary of the atomic bombing on Japan. And this Sunday, Global Zero will be hosting a Biker on the Bomb at the Campanile on Iowa State's campus. A representative from Global Zero came in and spoke briefly about Biker on the Bomb and the seriousness of nuclear weaponry.
We're a chapter here on campus in Ames of Global Zero, the campaign to eliminate nuclear weapons. Every year around the anniversaries of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombing 71 years ago in Japan, we hold bike rides in a bunch of cities across the country, and they are around a small nuclear blast of what the blast would be like at Hiroshima. So we rally beforehand and call on the elimination of nuclear weapons and then hit up the bike ride. This year we're supposed to have probably around 20 people. It's at 2 o'clock on Sunday at the Campanile on campus. So it will be a 5-mile radius distance, which is about the blast zone of what happened in Hiroshima. And we do this partially as the rally, kind of to hear perspectives on why we need to get rid of nuclear weapons, but also to visualize what the dangers of a nuclear blast would look like today. I got involved with Global Zero mostly because I cared about our safety, no matter where you are in the States. I think none of us should be living under the threat of nuclear war, of our communities and our livelihoods being lost in a moment's notice because of politics that are beyond us. And I think that this is an issue that often our generation doesn't know about anymore, kind of thinks of as dated. When today we actually still have 15,000 nuclear weapons in the world, almost half of them here in the United States. Many of those nuclear weapons, pretty much all of them, are hundreds of times more powerful than the ones that we used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which killed 129,000 people cumulatively. That is an inexcusable toll on human life. And a weapon that just really should never be used for any reason. What we do is, so working in here in Ames, we're holding Biker on the Bomb, but really this movement goes cities across the world. We work, Global Zero works out of the U.S., India, Pakistan, nuclear states across the country. And we think that it's important to hold events like that, this here in Ames, because we can educate the public about this issue and re-engage people about it and bring it back towards that kind of local community level where real change can happen on this issue.
If you want to participate in Bike Around the Bomb, everyone will be meeting with their bikes at 2 p.m. this Sunday at the Campanile on ISU's campus. So KHOI is having a birthday on August 13th. It's our fourth birthday, our fourth anniversary. We've been on the air for 4 years now. It's crazy. So we are having a 4B celebration that includes birthday, basketball, book sale, and barbecue. There will be a 3-on-3 basketball tournament. It's $24 per team if you want to join, so come down to the station with your team name, the number of players you have, and the entry fee, and we can sign you up. First place winners will receive Aquatic Center passes. We will be having a book sale the 13th and the 14th. So bring your wallets and get some good books. And if you have books that you would like to donate, we are still accepting donations up until the sale. At the event, Willie's Barbecue will be serving some food along with the music entertainment that we'll be playing. Right now we have Dima Cash, who is a hip-hop rap artist, Vinyl Vagabonds, a local alternative group, and there's more acts to be announced later. That's August 13th, KHY's birthday bash. Things start around 11, basketball at noon. Live entertainment will start about 3. Food will be served from 5 to 7. Come on down to KHOI at 410 Douglas Avenue in the old Pantorium building for our birthday celebration. I'm Dalton Gackle with my co-host Zachary Neuendorf. You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI. A special thanks to our guests Anna Van John and Josiah Green, two students who studied abroad this summer in Europe and China, respectively. And thanks again to Cole Stout, ISU's student body president.
Local Talk is broadcasted on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find contact information and links for the people and places we've talked about. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. You can become a member or donate at any time by using our website, khoifm.org. Just look for the big donate button. If you would like to join our Local Talk team or the radio station, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or you can look it up on our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed this show, please tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.